This is the Novel Marketing Podcast.
I'm Thomas Umstadt Jr.
I'm James L. Rubart.
And this is the show for novelists who hate marketing but still want to become best-selling authors.
Okay, Thomas, in this episode, we're going to talk to folks about how independent authors can use crowdfunding to promote and pay for their next book. But first, just for those who don't know exactly what crowdfunding is, can you give us a quick definition?
Well, if this were an exam, the cheap definition would be it's funding from a crowd, raising money from a group of people. But that only gives you partial credit in the University of Novel Marketing. But in many ways, it's nothing new. We've been raising funds from crowds for a long time. If you go to church, chances are they pass a plate and there's a voluntary donation that you make, and that funds the operations of the church. What seems new, though, is sites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo making it a lot easier to raise money from a much bigger crowd without needing a church or, you know, a big building or all of the trappings that goes along with that. And perhaps the best way to explain how it works is through a story. So a friend of ours, Mary DeMuth, wanted to write a book. She'd written a bunch of other books before, been, you know, writing for years. And she wrote a book and everybody turned her down. All the publishers that normally said yes to her book said no to this
book. She had relationships with these folks, right, and had written books for them in the past. But this time they said, no, we're not going to do this book because of the controversial subject, correct?
Right, and they didn't know how to sell it. They didn't think the audience was big enough. You know, it's a book about sexual abuse, which is like 1 out of 4 Americans or 1 out of 5 Americans. So it's like, what do you mean the audience isn't big enough? But whatever. They all said no to her. And so she really felt like she was supposed to write this book, and she knew she had an audience of folks who had been reading her blog and her past books who wanted to buy this book. But she wanted to do it right. She wanted to do it with the same level of professionalism that went into all of her other books. So she didn't want to do a kind of a cheap create space type, just throw something out there type book. And so she put together a budget and it looked like it was going to cost about $10,000 to hire the editors and do the offset printing and all of that. She's like, I don't have $10,000 to spend
right
on this.
Sure.
And so what we did, I worked with her and we posted a campaign on Indiegogo, where people who backed the campaign, they donate, say, $10, and they would get a copy of her ebook, or they donate $16, and they get the ebook and the paperback, and for $30, they get a signed copy, and, you know, for $100 or $250, whatever, she would do a Skype interview, and we kind of had all these levels all the way up to $2,500, she'll come to your church and to a workshop or a seminar, something like that. And we posted it on on Indiegogo, and people started backing it. And they started backing it for a lot more money than we thought they were. So people who would have bought a $10 book were now backing at the $20 or $30 level, buying multiple copies of a book because they wanted to see it fund. They wanted to help create it. And so they had a sense of ownership, a sense of buy-in. And when the dust settled 30 days later, you know how much money we raised?
Drum roll.
$25,000 for a book the publishers didn't think would work. And so
right
now she was able to do things like get a professionally produced audiobook and do a study guide and all of these other add-ons to the book. And she had a built-in set of readers. And here's the interesting thing. She had just as many sales, if not more, her first month of launching her book as she had people who bought the book in the crowdfunding campaign. So she raised all of this money without actually hurting her sales when the book went live, because she had all of these built-in advocates for her book. And on day one, they got the book. She had the books, copies of the book shipped directly to her readers straight from the factory where the books were made. And so on day one, there was this huge initial buzz that really took her book to prominence. So Not Marked by Mary DeMuth, very successful Indiegogo campaign.
So Thomas, is she the exception or is she the rule? Do you have another story other than just Mary?
I have a bunch of stories. We did a campaign with Enclave Publishing. We crowdfunded 4 or 5 books through them. But another story I want to illustrate, though, that's perhaps a more realistic one, is a lady named Marcy Scyther. She'd been writing quite a few books, but she wanted to do something a little different, something outside of her brand. She wanted to write a YA book or a middle grade book, and didn't know if there'd be any demand for it. So she posts it on Kickstarter, And sure enough, she gets a bunch of people backing it. And she had a more modest goal. I think it was just a couple thousand dollars. But she ended up raising that money. Yeah. And I remember she sent me a video of a classroom full of school children just going crazy when they got copies of this book. And she's like, it had me in tears, you know, because they were just jumping up in joy, excited to receive a book that would not have existed if she hadn't been able to raise money from her future readers of the book. So those are a couple of stories to kind of illustrate what you can use crowdfunding for. There's some benefits of crowdfunding that I'm really excited about.
So the first one has to be you get the money now, right? Instead of saying, I'm going to put all this time and energy and hours and sometimes, 9, 10, 11, 12 months into it, this way you can actually get paid up front. And I want to get into asking you about why people would back, okay? Because that's one of the key components of it. Because part of me goes, hey, I wrote my first novel. Nobody paid me to do it. I had to put in my own sweat and tears, not knowing if the thing was ever going to sell. But what an appeal if an independent author says, yes, I want to go with this. To get the money up front, are you kidding? That's a huge benefit.
Exactly. And a lot of books, you'll post in the back of the book a name of all the backers or a name of all the backers above a certain amount. Mary didn't do that for her sexual abuse recovery book because that would have been a little awkward. Not a lot of people are excited to have their name in a book about sexual abuse. But for like a typical novel, there's a bunch of reasons to back it. One, and this is probably the number one reason initially, is that I like you. So I'm your friend or your family member who would normally, if you were traditionally published, expect a free copy. But if you're sure. crowdfunding it, they're going to back it to support you. And they're like, oh yeah, $20, I'd be happy to throw that in, whether or not they plan to read your book or not. So don't undermine that as a motivation. That's a very real motivation. The second, though, is that they want to read your book. They want, let's say they've read past books of yours or they're familiar with your writing style and they want more. And the enjoyment of being a part of something and helping make something happen, now they have a sense of ownership. When that book comes out, they want to see it succeed because they contributed to the success of that book. Another reason
well,
people...
Well, it's like an insider, isn't it? Don't you feel like you're an insider? Is the concert more fun to see from out front or backstage? There's something about being backstage that's so cool, even though you're probably not going to get the sound as good, right?
Exactly. And it's that backstage access that people get really excited about and really cause them to want to back. Other reasons people will back your book is they may get a discount. Typically, you want to discount the Kickstarter campaign a little bit from what the retail price would be. So it's like you buy it early, you get a discount. That can be a motivational thing. Although, like, cutting the price from $10 to $6 isn't that motivational. It's like saving $4, yay. You know, it's more if you're, say, crowdfunding a board game where they're saving $20, that's more of a motivation. But the final motivation, if you're a novelist, is what some novelists do is they'll name characters or places or streets after backers, if it's a certain level of backing
sure.
or not. So if you think you're writing a story and, you know, the protagonist lives on Smith Street, and you know, or John Smith Street, and John Smith backed your campaign for $100, and so got a street named after him or a character named after him. People really get excited about that. And when you name it after those people and they backed it, now they want to tell all their friends, hey, check out this book. I'm a corpse. I die in the opening act. You know, the bomb goes off.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm the dead guy. And
exactly.
That's really exciting for folks, and it gives people another reason to share your book.
Okay, so here's another question for you, Thomas. I decide I want to write a book on underwater basket weaving, right? And I'm all excited about it. I think it's going to be the greatest book since sliced bread, this kind of thing. In a sense, I get to test the book idea. In other words, if I want to raise $2,000 and I raise $200, it's kind of an indication that maybe this wasn't such a great idea, right?
Exactly. You get to avoid failure, expensive failure. But even more importantly, let's say that your book on underwater basket weaving just goes viral crazy. And, you know, 10,000 people back it and all 10,000 people want copies of your book. Well,
yeah.
You don't want to do 10,000 books print on demand. That's going to cost a fortune. You could save a lot of money printing your book in a different way, say digital offset or traditional offset, but you would never have the guts to print that number of copies if you didn't already know there was that amount of demand. And so it helps you with success. It also helps you with failure. And there are four reasons why crowdfunding is more effective than a traditional book launch when it comes to motivating people to buy your book. So y'all ready? Here are the four reasons. First is that it creates a sense of excitement. So you can get a sense of an excitement for a book launch, but a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter is even more exciting because there's an uncertainty as to whether or not there's going to be success or not. It's kind of like going to a football game. If you don't know your team is going to win, it's a more exciting game than if you're certain your team is going to lose or certain your team is going to win. And so that
with Kickstarter, you either win big or you don't win at all, right?
Right, right. And that number is right there in big font, how much money you've raised. So there's a scoreboard and everyone's pulling for you. So one little secret is that campaigns that get to 60% funded get to 100% funded 99% of the time. Because once you get to 60%, your fans get you the rest of the way.
Okay.
The second reason that crowdfunding is better than a traditional book launch is that it creates a sense of urgency. So the problem with a regular book launch often is that I can buy your book whenever. So unless you have some sort of limited time discount or something like, oh, your book sounds good, I'll buy it tomorrow. Well, tomorrow never comes. Whereas with a crowdfunding campaign, Kickstarter's got that date and it is ticking down. Every day it counts it off. And then once you get within a few days, it starts counting it by the hour. So it's like there's 5 hours left of this campaign. People freak out and start backing it.
And that urgency comes from the time, but it also the urgency comes from, and you touched on this, is you build in these incentives, right?
Exactly.
Where if you do not back by September 30th, you are going to miss out on X. And one of the incentives that I remember very vividly is, you remember this book, I'm sure you're familiar with The Blue Like Jazz, that Don Miller wrote. And I was with Don Miller at a conference earlier this June. Well, his director, let me back up just a second. They wanted to make a movie out of Blue Like Jazz, but they did not have the money to do it. And they didn't come up with the idea to use Kickstarter. It was a couple of fans who said, this movie has to be made. And they started the Kickstarter campaign. The good news is they ended up funding the movie. The movie came out all because of Kickstarter. Well, one of the incentives is Steve Taylor, who was the director of the film, and for those music aficionados of the 80s, he was actually a big deal back in the 80s Christian music scene.
What are these things called the 80s you speak of?
That's right. You've heard of them, though, right, Thomas?
I was born in the 80s.
And one of the promises that Steve Taylor, the director, made was, if you back at this level, I will call you personally.
No.
Well, I think he's still working his way through like 3,800 phone calls.
Oh, my gosh. So you have to be careful, and that is a very...
What you promise, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great cautionary tale. So you don't want to promise someone something that causes you time on a per-person basis. So writing thank you notes, calling on the phone. You want to make those your very, very high-level campaigns just in case a million people back. You know, you physically cannot write a million thank you notes. Whereas you can say, I'll put your name in my book and Kickstarter exports a list, and you copy and paste it. That is much more realistic. Another great thing about crowdfunding, though, in addition to the fact that it creates urgency, there's that ticking timer, it also creates scarcity. So you can limit your backing levels, and just the nature of the urgency creates scarcity where it's like, oh no, if I don't back it now, I'll never be able to back it. Or there's only 25 spots left of this level that I really want. And once it's gone, it's gone. And scarcity is an incredibly valuable, powerful marketing motivation for folks. And it's one that books almost never have. The goal with typical book marketing is to make the book ubiquitous. And the great thing about crowdfunding is that you can make your book both scarce during the campaign and ubiquitous once it comes out. So you have the benefits of both. You can have your scarcity and your ubiquity as well.
I think that's a great point, because people understand this around Christmas time, right? The hot toy is the one that ends up being scarce, and these marketing people understand what they're doing. This huge, huge demand snowballs, and I think the same thing is happening here.
Exactly. And you also create a scarcity of, if you don't back the campaign, you don't have the story to tell your friends. Like, you know, if I back a book that ends up being really popular, I get major hipster points. It's like, hey, I've believed in that book before, it was cool. You know, I backed it on Kickstarter. And you laugh.
Hey, I loved you too. You know, before anybody knew who
that's
they were.
That's right. You laugh, but that's totally how people are. And
exactly.
In the board gaming space, that's a huge deal. Someone brings a board game, they're like, hey, this is the Kickstarter edition. I got this on Kickstarter. It's like, ooh. You know, it motivates everybody else to back things on Kickstarter as well. And then finally, crowdfunding creates a sense of popularity. So it shows the number of people who are backing the project, and that number is shown in a very big font. It always feels like a lot of folks. And so people want to do what they see other people doing, and that social proof, whether it's number of Facebook shares or Twitter likes or number of backers, all of that is combined to be like, man, everybody else is doing this. I want to do it too on crowdfunding. So the four reasons I like it better than a traditional book launch is the excitement, the urgency, the scarcity, and the popularity.
Okay, so Thomas, we don't have all the time in the world left, but you have to touch on the cons, because there's got to be downsides to
this. Oh, you're raining on my parade, Jim. It's all roses and butterflies all the time. If you back on Kickstarter, all your wildest dreams will come true. or not. So that's a good point. There are some very real dangers with crowdfunding. And the first is that failure is very public. When you fail on Kickstarter, it's the end. You don't cancel your campaign before it's over, or on Indiegogo at any point. It's there as a online monument to your failure for the rest of time. And everyone who backed you knows that it failed, and the score of how much you were trying to raise and how much you raised is there. And so that can be a little bit intimidating to have that failure there. Although I will say a record was recently broken. Somebody raised $10 million for a product on Kickstarter. It's a cooler with a blender built in, a bunch of other things. It's the world's coolest cooler. It originally failed to fund. They set like a $40,000 goal and missed it. And then they redid it with a lower, more reasonable goal, and they passed it by like $9,960,000 or something like that. And so you can learn from that failure. So failure's not the end of the world. Everything is a risk of failure. But if you fail to write a book and it fails to get published, nobody knows that. You know, your family might know that, your close friends might know that, but there's no monument to your failure online.
Right.
The second danger is that it's a steep learning curve. There's a lot to learn about crowdfunding. Unless you've been backing a lot of campaigns in the past, you may not know much about how to create a campaign in the future. So that's something to be cognizant of. It's something to learn, which leads us to our third danger, which is time.
So it takes probably upwards of 7, 8, 9 minutes a day to take care of this?
Yeah, not so much. Maybe replace minutes with hours and you're on the money. So it becomes a full-time job while the campaign is going, and there's a lot of time to prepare the campaign. You got to write all the content. You got to figure out the backing rewards. You got to set up a budget. Hopefully you've created a budget so you know that you're not bankrupting yourself with the campaign, and you got to create the video. All of those things take time, and then once it's running, you've got to promote it and let folks know about it. So it's not like this switch that you switch and money falls from the heavens. It's like a fire. You put the fuel in, and then you start the fire, and then you get the heat back.
And you do all that work not knowing if it's going to fund or not. So right. Definitely that part of it is a risk.
It really is the hero's journey in many ways, crowdfunding, because you're taking this big risk and it could pay off and change the world, or you could fail and it's, you know, a devastating defeat. And you don't know. You know, I've done a bunch of crowdfunding campaigns now, both for myself and for clients. And there's no such thing as a surefire campaign. The products I've done that I just thought would be dogs and they just blew up, and other ones that I thought would be, you know, super exciting and they failed to get traction or as much traction as I was hoping. So it can be very, very effective. And I'm a big believer that crowdfunding is going to change publishing, because it's going to allow poorer people, folks without money, to self-publish with the same tools and professional editing and cover design that is already available for the wealthy. So not everyone has $5,000 in the bank to just self-publish their book, but with crowdfunding, you don't need that money in the bank in order to still have a professional product.
Okay, Thomas, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask one more question before we close, and that is, what about the criticism of when people say, crowdfunding has had its time. It's on the down slope now. What about that?
Oh, that sounds like people in the 1990s. They're like, the internet's going to be over soon. You know, it's just a fad. And I was like, yeah. So here's why I don't think crowdfunding is a fad. And that is because it's nothing new. So we've been crowdfunding like at churches, like I said earlier, for hundreds of years. And the internet makes it very effective. Now, this is a great time to do it because it's getting a lot of press. So like online auctions don't get a lot of press anymore. You don't hear the news talking about some crazy eBay story. You know, that was 10 years ago and 20 years ago. eBay was all over the news. But eBay is still around. many, many people still use eBay. It's just not quite as sexy as it used to be. Why? Because auctions are nothing new. People have been doing auctions, you know, for thousands of years, and now you can do auctions online. So crowdfunding is not going away. I think that's just beginning to take off in many ways when it comes to popularity. And you can ride that roller coaster up if you'd like by jumping in sooner rather than later.
And Thomas, we should do an episode on this, but one of the other reasons it's going to be around for a long time is because we've had a major cultural shift to a society that in the 80s, we were talking about the 80s, that was the me generation, all about me. And now we have shifted to the us generation, where we want to be part of something. We want to be a collective whole that's bigger than just ourselves. And that's one of the other reasons that this is actually the perfect time to do crowdfunding.
That's exactly right. And instead of a handful of people deciding what books get published, everyone gets to decide what books get published. So if you don't like the books that are in Lifeway or at Barnes & Noble, well, with crowdfunding, you can do something about that. You can contribute to the books that you do want to see created, and you can help change the future. So it's a lot of fun, not just to create products, but also to back existing products.
This week's sponsor is the Ultimate Crowdfunding Course for Authors. What a coincidence.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. And this course actually was designed by Thomas and by Mary DeMuth. And the reason I don't have any skin in this game, so this is my unbiased opinion, the reason this course is so good is because Thomas has actually done it. It's not like he researched it and then put all this stuff together. This comes from his own experience of doing campaigns extremely successfully, doing some campaigns not as successful, and figuring out what works. And I will say, Thomas won't brag this about himself, but I will say that 99.9% of the campaigns Thomas has done have funded and have gone over their goal. So if you're looking into this, I encourage you to check out his Ultimate Crowdfunding course. And where would people go to get that, Thomas?
Just go to authormedia.com/crowdfunding. And we created that course because Mary was getting so many people asking her how she did it that she's like, okay, we'll just put it all into a guide where you can follow step by step from how to build your tribe to how to create the campaign and even how to structure it to go beyond 100%. So I'm really excited about this course, and I hope you enjoy it. We also hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We would love it if you'd leave us a review. We've been talking a lot about branding lately, and we are using your reviews to help figure out what's resonating and what's not. So we are reading the reviews. If you leave us a review and say, hey, I like it when you do this, I don't like it when you do that, you may find some changes in the near future on the Novel Marketing Podcast based on that. So to leave us a review, just go to iTunes and put in a review. We'd really appreciate that.
This has been the Novel Marketing Podcast, giving you novel ideas on how to promote yourself and your writing offline, online, and everywhere in between.